Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast. It is Wednesday, March 28th. Nick Whalen here with James Anderson. We're brought to you, as always, by DraftKings.com. We're also brought to you by the FCFL, the fan-controlled football league. James, we're recording a day early this week, due in large part to the fact that it turns out baseball is starting back up tomorrow. And you obviously have a large hand in our baseball coverage at rotowire.com. So if you're into baseball, make sure you check out all of James' prospect work on the website. But this will probably be what, your second to last appearance on the NBA pod of the season? I mean, if I can convince you to come back on next week.
Of the regular season.
Right.
Probably will be on around the draft, but yeah.
Yep.
You know, you were asking for topics before the show. Chase Budinger just had a pretty nice no-look pass, if you want to talk about that.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The last, like, 3 days in the office here, and we're doing it right now, we have watched nothing but McDonald's All-American dunk contest, three-point shootouts, and games, because that's what's been on ESPNU and, I think, NBA TV. So right now we are watching the 06 All-American game, which featured Javaris Crittenton, currently in prison. Featured Gerald Henderson, who I don't know who's announcing this game, but they said he's a lock to be a multi-time All-Star.
Oh, really?
Jury's still out. He's only 30. Wow. That's a possibility. But yeah, as you said, Chase Budinger throwing things down. I think he won the dunk contest this year as well.
Man.
Where does he rank on your like pantheon of favorite Arizona guys?
He wasn't a big winner, so he's probably not top five or top six or. I mean, he's probably borderline top 10. Like, he kind of had a – he's in that sort of Hassan Adams, Salim Stoudemire, no offense, but, like, just kind of the guys who had their, like, kind of run as the best player on the team but didn't really do anything with that run. And, you know, they were fun to watch. They didn't really do much in the NBA either, so it's just kind of – we're left thinking about that one time they did that one thing and that one game on that team that didn't go to the Sweet 16.
Who is your favorite Arizona player ever? Like the guy that you will forever vouch for, both at the college level?
Probably Luke Walton.
Luke Walton, really?
Yeah.
And that was the case back when he was playing, or has that been something that's developed?
So that one season, like that 2000 season, I think Gilbert Arenas was my favorite player on that team, but as things have kind of, you know, played out since then, I kind of look back fondly on Luke Walton. I mean, he's a four-year player.
I feel like I look fondly on Gilbert Arenas more now than I did 5 years ago.
I think he just kind of embodied what we were trying to do back then with the program. And, you know, I love the Miles Simon, Mike Bibby teams.
Sure.
You know, I love that. We can claim Steve Kerr. We can claim Kenny Lofton and Sean Elliott. I love that. But the early 2000s was kind of my heyday as a Cats fan.
Ironically enough, today is Luke Walton's birthday.
Oh, nice.
He's only 38 years old. I would have thought he was in his 40s for sure. He was playing in the NBA not all that long ago, 2012, 2013 for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Speaking of college basketball players, we haven't really talked too much about the NCAA tournament the last couple of weeks, due in large part to the fact that pretty much all of the prospects that we were gushing over a few weeks ago got knocked out. And, you know, as we head into the Final Four, we still have McCall Bridges. We still have, I mean, Devontae Graham and Malik Newman are probably late first, early second round prospects with Kansas. But for the most part, the big name prospects that we've been looking out for were knocked out early. Was there anything that these guys did or didn't do, you know, that kind of, I wouldn't say dramatically affects their stock, because I think when most of these guys only played one or two games, only so much can happen. But was there anything that you saw of these first couple weekends that made you either like one of the prospects more or kind of second guess one of your previous evaluations?
The guy that improved his stock most in my for me personally was Wendell Carter. Yeah. And that was probably more to do with me just not watching a ton of Duke games all the way through during the regular season and just getting a lot of looks at him. You know, when I would be watching Duke games in the tournament, it would basically just turn into me watching just Wendell Carter and not really caring about what was happening in the actual game. And I'm a big fan. I think that he's kind of in that next tier to me very clearly. Like, he's not in the Ayton Doncic tier, but he's right there with Bagley, Jackson, Bamba. I really think you can make a case that the Carter, Bagley, Jackson, Bamba foursome, I really think could go in any order, and I think you could justify it. So I just think that's definitely not where I was on him a couple weeks ago. I thought he was kind of in that Sexton, McCall Bridges sort of tier, and I think he's firmly in my top six now.
I think there's this belief with Wendell Carter, because he looks bigger, you know, than a guy like Bagley, that he's not a good athlete. You know, like he lumbers a little bit when he runs, but I think he's a very underrated athlete. I think he's a very physical rebounder. I mean, if you look at his numbers from the Kansas game, he only had 10 points, 2 rebounds. You know, nothing jumps off the page there, but he did only play 22 minutes. He had 5 fouls, ended up fouling out of that game with a few minutes left. And he was, you know, saddled with foul trouble for most of the game, so couldn't really be as physical as he wanted. I think ceiling-wise, there's really no debate that Bagley's ceiling is quite a bit higher than that of Carter, but I think you could make a pretty strong argument that Carter's floor is quite a bit higher than Bagley's, right?
Yeah, and I think he's more integratable. Like, I think any team in the league could take Wendell Carter and have zero problems, like, having him assimilate into their mix of talent. And with Bagley, like, that's a knock. It's not even necessarily a fair knock, but it's just, like, you kind of would have to structure your offense in a specific way if he's on the court, and same thing with your defense. Whereas Carter, you know, he's going to be able to guard fours and fives. He's going to be able to play the four and the five. He's going to be able to stretch the court. He's going to be able to protect the rim. He doesn't need the ball. I mean, there's just it's not hard to envision how he's going to have a long, productive NBA career.
Yeah, I know this isn't a perfect comparison, like, style-wise, but I think he could be, like, a Thaddeus Young type. You know, like, I would never necessarily expect Wendell Carter to be, like, a multi-time All-Star, but, like you said, any NBA team in the league is looking for a guy like him, and he could play 20, you know, his third year in the NBA, he could probably play 25 minutes for, like, 28 teams in the NBA. And with Bagley, I think you're bringing Bagley in under the expectation that, you know, he's not going to be your star player, your number one option right away, but you can't necessarily just throw him out there and say, you know, go fit in with these guys. Like, you do kind of have to build things around Marvin Bagley, and in some ways they did that at Duke. I mean, they played Wendell Carter essentially out of position to allow Bagley to do what he wanted to do. I don't know if you watched that game against Kansas on Sunday. It did feel like Bagley was, like, woefully underutilized at the end of that game. And some credit goes to Kansas, you know, for the way they defended him. But, you know, they had Svi Mykhailiuk, like, basically playing behind Bagley in the high post for a lot of that second half. And, you know, I think Bagley's post game is probably a little more underdeveloped, you know, when he gets outside of the restricted area. But at the same time, it just felt like they weren't even looking to him late in that game.
I'm kind of speechless because I just saw Sharon Collins reject Ty Lawson's stuff at the rim. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way that March goes, though. Like, it's going to come down to your guards. Like, how many times can you successfully get your big man the ball and let him go to work? Like, in a close game like that, it almost always just comes down to your best guard try to break someone down off the dribble, maybe kick it out to an open guy. But, like, it's just college is just so different from the pros, where everyone just kind of sucks in on that big guy and makes it really tough for him to work. And I don't think it probably should have come down to that Duke had way more talent, but their floor was quite a bit lower than I think a lot of people wanted to admit going into the tournament, just because of their youth.
Yeah. I mean, and they struggled at times against Syracuse zone. And I think Kansas, you know, was able to pick them apart late in that game. It was smart of Bill Self to put LeGerald Vick as kind of the middle guy, you know, usually you throw a four or a five in that spot. And they had Vick kind of acting almost as like a libero in volleyball, like the way he was just getting and firing off touch passes, you know, most of which went to Malik Newman. I like Malik Newman, by the way, as an NBA prospect, not as a first round pick, but he's 6'5", 6'6", extremely good athlete. I think he's a guy that had he had a better freshman year 2 years ago at Mississippi State, could have been like a back-end lottery pick. I mean, he was fifth or sixth best player in the country coming out of high school, and that whole situation deteriorated so quickly that I think it kind of hurt his stock. But he's someone I think certainly to keep an eye on.
I like Vic. I hate Vic's hair. I don't know what he's doing with that. Not that you asked, but
I was going to ask.
I think I don't really care. I don't think anyone on that team's going to be all that good, but I think Vic, Newman to me just still sort of seems like a guy that maybe thinks he's a bit better than he is, and you don't want to take a wing like that, mm-hmm. who has the potential to be like a defensive stopper, but kind of still thinks of himself as just this go-to option offensively. So I think Vic appeals to me a little bit more in that respect. But
sure. What about the guys? I was talking to one of our coworkers, KOB, yesterday about Duke has 4 or 5 stars coming in next year, including Tyus Jones, little brother, who I know you're excited to watch. And it kind of presents the same issue that we've seen at Kentucky over the last few years, where if you're going to stick around at Duke, it's gotten to the point where you nothing's guaranteed, because you have the top 3 players in the class plus who some would say is the number 1 point guard coming in. Does that mean if you're Gary Trent or Trayvon Duval, do you basically have to declare for this draft? And Trayvon Duval had a nice game against Kansas. I think he had 20 points, but also took a horrifically bad shot at the end of the game that essentially sealed Duke's fate. I don't think he's a player that helped himself all that much. I think he's kind of sat comfortably in that 20 to 30 range.
Yeah.
And his main appeal is he's athletic. He has, a defensive profile that NBA teams like, but he has really no semblance of a consistent jump shot at this point.
I think that Duval needs to go, because you can't, the worst thing you can do as a point guard, a point guard only type of guard, is stick around knowing that you're not going to be
right. He can't play off ball.
Right. So he's just going to be their backup point guard if he stays. So yeah, he needs to go. Trent, I think, could stay, and I think probably should stay. You could have, I talk about this with you. I talk about it with plenty of people. Just what's better, going and getting a quick NBA paycheck and then kind of fizzling out, or staying for 3 or 4 years somewhere like Duke and kind of being a legend and a guy that could always kind of show up and be welcome with open arms. Because he just seems like a guy where, third year, fourth year Trent is a pretty key piece on a team that's probably going to contend for a title. He could be. And guys that are shooters like that, I don't think the expiration date on them as a prospect dissolves the way it does an athletic point guard like Duval. Mm-hmm. It's anyone's going to take a shooting guard that is shooting 42 or 44% in college.
Well, look at McCall Bridges. It's not hard to imagine. And Gary Trent, is a much, much more, or much highly rated prospect, I guess, if you want to put it that way, coming out of high school. I think he was a guy who was viewed as a 50-50 one and done, probably closer to 60-40 coming into the year. But unlike Duval, with the class that Duke has coming in, Gary Trent, you could still pencil in as a starter. I mean, you could go Jones, Trent, Reddish, Zion, and Barrett. And obviously that's a little bit of a smaller lineup. But at some, those all 4 of those guys are going to start. I don't think there's really much of a question about that. And he is the type of player that, whether he leaves or not, I don't know that there's a ton he could do to really help his stock or hurt his stock, unless he just falls off a cliff as a shooter. Whether, he's not the type of player who you look at and say, we want to get this guy in our system at age 19. You know, he's going to be the same type of player at age 21 that he is right now. So I agree with you on that. Last guy I want to hit on is Bamba. Played well, in Texas's loss.
I heard he got squeezed by the refs in that game.
Yes, he did. He fouled out. In 31 minutes, had 13 points, 14 rebounds. I don't think he played at all in overtime. They lost that game, but I thought he looked good. There were a couple possessions where you really realize how raw he is. They dumped it down to him, and he's got 5 inches on anybody guarding him on Nevada. And there was one where he was 2 feet from the hoop and turned for a left or a right-handed kind of mini hook and just completely airballed it, left it way short. And that's. I guess I didn't realize quite how limited he is. If he's not catching a lob or getting a rebound directly under the rim, There's really not a great chance of him scoring, and that was evident against what you would probably consider inferior competition in terms of the guys who were defending him.
Right. I mean, that the nice thing from a pro perspective is, like, his flaws, to a certain extent, are things that he should be able to get quite a bit better at, and the stuff he does that you can't really teach, like, it's kind of to the thousandth degree. Like, you can't teach someone having that wingspan and being that big of a defensive presence. So he definitely belongs in the top six. It's just going to kind of come down to who's picking in that 3 to 6 range. Do they want to chase kind of like a guy they think could be a two-way superstar? Do they want to just kind of take his defensive presence and kind of sort of model things after what Utah's doing? I think Rudy Gobert's really opened some eyes this season, just kind of proving how dominant a team can be without a ton of offensive talent if you just have one of the best defensive players in the league at center. I mean, it's just kind of crazy what they've been able to do just because of having Gobert, and I got to assume that's going to appeal to a handful of teams picking up at the top.
Right. I think Bamba's flaws are very similar, like you said, to the flaws that Gobert had, very similar to the flaws that DeAndre Jordan had coming out of A&M. And I think Bamba was probably a better college player than DeAndre, and that's going to be reflected in where he's picked. I mean, DeAndre was an early second rounder. And I think the expectation in the modern NBA for a big man like that, you don't have to necessarily be two-dimensional. I mean, ideally, you can score and defend at that level, but like you said with Gobert, I mean, as long as you can run to the rim and catch lobs, like, that's considered enough offensive skill. Whereas 15 years ago, if Bamba was coming out and couldn't score on a 6'8 guy with a drop step, that would be a huge red flag.
Right.
And like, to me now, that's just not that big of a deal. Like, as long as you can catch lobs, that's really all you need. And anything after that is kind of gravy offensively. And where do you think is the best fit for Bamba?
Okay. Gotta pull it up.
I mean, there's Memphis is the one, I guess, if they keep Marc Gasol, you could kind of cross them off, but pretty much any other team that's going to be picking high could use him.
I mean, he'd be a good fit on all these teams, really. I'd like the fit in Dallas a lot, just because I think that he would get maximized there, or there's a better chance he gets maximized there than, like, Phoenix could use him, but I mean, he's the type of guy that he could go to Phoenix and just kind of just melt away into nothing. And
shout out Marquise Chris.
I mean, theoretically, like, the best version of Bamba and the best version of Dragan Bender is a pretty intriguing 5'4", but that's, what are the odds of that happening?
That's the thing about Phoenix. It's like, of all these bad teams, Phoenix is the worst team in the league right now, but Memphis, Atlanta, Orlando, Dallas, like, none of those teams have Devin Booker. I think I like Josh Jackson. I think you probably like him as well more than most people do. And I mean, they're just not that far off. You know, they're one of the teams that I think people think are going to throw an offer at Aaron Gordon. They might try to get in on Jabari Parker. Like, they're a little bit closer to, at least, you know, maybe not becoming a contender or even returning to the playoffs, but they're at least close to getting what you would consider a pretty decent young core.
What do you think about the Bulls?
Bulls would be a lot of fun
because the Bulls
aren't that far away from being the 8 seed.
Right, and he would kind of get to, you know, whatever Robin Lopez can do in terms of mentoring him, but also just kind of having that that long-term duo of Markkanen and Bamba, I really think would kind of play to both of their strengths.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you talk about the prototypical person to put next to Bamba or the prototypical guy to put next to Markkanen, like, the way their skills complement each other perfectly. Yeah, I mean, a hypothetical starting five next year of, what, Dunn, LaVine, player X at small forward, Markkanen and
some
Bamba.
Guy.
I would buy a Mo Bamba Chicago Bulls jersey if that happens.
I would not. I mean, the fact that I haven't bought a Markkanen one probably speaks to the likelihood of me buying a Bamba one.
Yeah, how have you not? How do you not own a Markkanen Arizona jersey?
I just don't. I like baseball jerseys more than NBA jerseys, just because it's like, I don't. The older I get, the less opportunities I have to wear basketball jerseys. So
I found the opposite.
and I, I've I really like the like super high quality MLB jerseys, like the $35 ones that are just really nice t-shirt material, and you know you can kind of wear them anywhere. I'm into that. Yeah. You're shaking your head no.
Jerseys? Like you're just talking like a normal t-shirt?
Yeah, but not like the super cheap ones, like the not the ones that like cost like $20 at Walmart or whatever, like the, sure. the nice ones you get from the like the shop that you okay. like actually want to wear, not just because of what it says on it, but just because it's a really nice shirt. I want a Luka Doncic Real Madrid jersey. I will buy that if somebody makes it available to me.
This is a call for help.
This is a plea for help. Somebody please find a way for me to get an authentic Luka Doncic Real Madrid jersey. I will buy it. I just need access to it. I haven't been able to find it yet, so someone let me know if that's out there.
It's purely an access issue. last note on the draft. I'm looking at Phoenix right now, and they would have the number one pick based on lottery odds. We knew that they're probably going to get the Bucks pick. That's protected 1 through 10 and 17 through 30. So in all likelihood, they'll end up with a top 3 or 4 pick plus Milwaukee's pick, which would be like 15 or 16. Uh-huh. And they also get Miami's pick this year, which I did not realize. And that's only 1 through 7 protected. So that's, at this point, guaranteed to convey. So we're looking at like a probably 90-plus percent chance that Phoenix has 1, 2, or 3, 15 or 16, and then – or 15 and 16, I guess, because Milwaukee and Miami are likely to finish 7 right. and 8 in the East. So
it's not a good, interesting It's not scenario. A good year to have 15 and 16.
It's though. Not, but you could package those picks. Plus they have 31.
For what?
To move up.
Who wants those?
People want those.
This is not a like I was surprised that the
Portland did it last year. Sacramento's done it.
Man, I guess teams have Phoenix been able to do it.
Did it a couple years ago? Isn't that how they got Chris?
Well, they had. Oh, right. Yeah.
I'm just saying there are assets to be had.
I mean, God bless them if they could package those two and move up into like the top 10 or something. Then hats off. But This is such a top heavy draft. Like, even just the gap between picking like 6 or 7 versus picking 8 or 9 is just a massive gap.
No, you're absolutely right. Okay, let's talk about Fultz a little bit. Alex and I talked a decent amount about Markelle Fultz on Tuesday's pod, but I'd like to get your thoughts. I do feel like, and I said this yesterday, I feel like the reactions were a little too positive. Yeah. Yesterday, I don't want to take anything away from Fultz. I think it was encouraging how aggressive he was. I think I would much rather have him take 13 shots yesterday in 14 minutes like mm-hmm. he did than him come out and take like 2 shots and just be passive. But at the same time, he didn't quite look ready to contribute. Like, I was listening to a pod yesterday where they're like, how do you fit him into the rotation? Does he play 30 minutes a night in the playoffs? Like, I don't think so. I don't think this guy is going to be ready to do anything more than what he did 2 nights ago. And we'll see. I mean, they're playing home against New York tonight. That'll be another test for him to go up against Nil Aquina. But I just don't see him being like an actual difference maker in the playoffs.
No. There were way too many gifs of the like pull-up 14-footer he hit than – like that. Why weren't people like sharing the air ball? Like, I mean, it was just everyone really was just going head first into putting a positive spin on that debut. And it's cool. It's like, cool. The number one pick finally, finally played in a game. It's cool. But it's, yeah, like you said, that he can't shoot from 3 at all right now.
Right.
And so that basically means he's Ben Simmons' backup.
Yeah. I think barring, kind of rapid improvement over these last 7 or 8 games.
But
I think
who like is a better player right now out of him and TJ McConnell? It's got to be McConnell.
It's McConnell.
Yeah. So
right. And do part of that is the fact that McConnell has just been playing all year.
Yeah.
And he's
he can shoot and he can make an open 3 if he's not going to make right. all. He's not going to make more than like maybe 38% of his wide open 3s, but he will hit some. And I mean the rotations get shorter in the playoffs. Like I think Fultz is going to have a DNP in the playoffs at least one.
I think there's going to be games where, I mean, like you said, if Fultz is not going to be comfortable shooting 3s, he cannot be on the court alongside Simmons.
No,
at almost I mean, maybe late in the game or something if it's out
people
of hand,
will like, and it's like I would rather leave him wide open than even a guy like Andre Roberson, because like Roberson at least like has hit three pointers. Like, I mean, this is he's hurt, but like
2 years ago, yeah.
Like Fultz, if you leave him wide open in the playoffs, like he might not even take it. Like he might just like sort of try to dribble in or pass it to someone. Like it's just you definitely do not have to guard him unless he has the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and I think Monday's game was colored by the fact that Denver just doesn't play defense whatsoever, and I think they're going to get him backup minutes in the playoffs. You know, I think they'll work him in, but I just don't see this being some sort of like big X factor, you know, of like what is the Sixers ceiling now Fultz is back. And I want him to succeed. Nobody's rooting against him at this point, right? I mean, everybody wants him to be good. I think the ship has just sailed on him being a real impact guy this year. And one of the things I said to Alex yesterday was like, even if he had played all year, there's a pretty decent chance that he wouldn't have been an overwhelming positive. You know, not many rookie point guards are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think anything you get from Fultz is just kind of, you know.
It's still going to be a storyline next year because this is a team that is just kind of sort of found their identity without him. And, you know, integrating him, like they're going to come into next season with all kinds of terrible predictions from people saying they're going to win like 55 games or whatever it is, and I think it's going to be tough for them to integrate him without it affecting wins and losses next year.
Well, especially with LeBron there. I mean, if Fultz can't shoot, can he play with LeBron and Simmons?
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When you're looking for a credit card, get one that wins awards. The U.S. Bank Visa Platinum Card is NerdWallet's 2021 Best of Awards winner for Best 0% Intro APR and Balance Transfer Credit Card. It provides a great way to pay for large purchases over time, as well as consolidating other card balances. And speaking of award winners, the U.S. Bank Altitude Go Visa Signature Card is NerdWallet's 2021 best credit card for dining out or ordering in. Earn 4x points on takeout, food delivery, and dining. Get 2x points at gas stations, grocery stores, and on streaming. If you're into cashback or travel rewards, U.S. Bank has credit cards that feature those benefits too. Check out their full suite of credit cards at usbank.com/creditcard. The creditor and issuer of these cards is U.S. Bank National Association, pursuant to a license from Visa USA, Inc., and the cards are available to United States residents only. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
All right, what else? Oh, I want to revisit before we wrap up. We talked about first-team All-NBA. We did our entire All-NBA teams a couple weeks ago, so if you want to go back and listen to that for some reason, it is available on the internet. Has anything changed? I mean, our biggest disagreements were with the guard spots. Can we safely rule Curry out? He's going to play around 50 games this year. And granted, a lot of other players are missing a ton of games, so it doesn't mean maybe quite as much as it would in other years. But like, where do you draw the line in terms of like, all right, you know, if you miss 30-plus games, you just can't be a first-teamer?
I think it has to matter, like, who the options are. Like, if this was, like, 50 games, these 50 games from Curry, I think put him pretty easily on an All-NBA team like, say, 10 years ago or whatever.
4 years ago, maybe.
Sure, yeah. I think the fact that there are so many quality candidates this year makes it tough to put him on. And I mean, how many more games is Chris Paul going to play than him?
Probably not too many more. I mean, I feel like it doesn't necessarily help Curry that he's missing like the last month of the season. You know, not that it's supposed to matter, but that's what's going to be on the mind of voters. Whereas Chris Paul missed his chunk of games much earlier. Paul's played 54 as of now, so he'll probably play like 61, 62.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I think I had Paul in, I had Curry in. I think I'd probably take Curry out. And I had, I had Oladipo. Did I have Oladipo and Westbrook out?
Because I know you had. I think you did. Yeah.
So I think I would.
DeRozan.
I would go with Lillard and Harden as my first team now, and then I would go CP and who are the other people?
What are you talking about? Just like good guards.
Who are the other guys?
I mean, Russ is an option.
I think I had Kyrie on.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's so, another guy that's kind of.
I think I probably would take Kyrie off now.
Yeah,
and I would put Russ and Oladipo on. So I would have Oladipo and Russ as my third team. I would have DeRozan and CP as my second team, and then I would have Lillard and Harden as my first team.
So Curry and Kyrie are just off entirely.
I think so, yeah.
I think Curry will still make one, whether it's fair or not. Kyrie is a little more questionable just because his production wasn't quite as good.
Well, then, I mean, but somebody, like, do you think people will pick 50-game Curry and leave Oladipo off?
I think they will, yeah.
Okay.
I think Curry, and there's no, like, set strategy for how or precedent for how you're supposed to do these votes, but I think Curry's missed enough games that he's not justifiable on the first team. I think some guys will put him on second team, and he'll certainly get some first team votes. That's not out of the question. But to me, like, if you miss that many games, it shouldn't knock you out of the running.
I think there's too much of a narrative about Oladipo's season and Indiana's season, and like, I just think that it's going to be hard for a lot of voters to leave him off. And I think you can basically put DeRozan and Westbrook on for sure at this point, right?
Yeah.
Do you see any scenario where those two don't get on?
Oh, no. I mean, I had DeRozan on my second team. I think he might. It's going to be DeRozan versus Lillard. And I guess you can throw Russ in there for that second first team spot, I think. For what it's worth, Kevin Durant on the Bill Simmons pod said unequivocally it's Russ. He said, if Steph's not the second guard on the first team, it's Russ.
Okay.
So that's one player perspective.
That's okay.
I don't think Russ is going to – I mean, Lillard, I think, has played, you know, inarguably better than Russell Westbrook for, like, 70% of the year.
Yeah.
and his team is going to be better. Right. I think that's going to be a factor. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think the injuries –
you can – I don't think it's like – you're not slighting – Kyrie and Steph when they miss that many games. And I think it's just, it is kind of a slap in the face to a guy like Oladipo if you say, yeah, I know you like had this amazing year that nobody saw coming and your team played really well and you were awesome and like you're way better than we thought, but this Curry guy, I mean, he only played 50 games, but what are we gonna do? Like,
back to the debate. What it ultimately comes down to for any award or all NBA team or all-star team, it's like, are we doing who is the best player or who was, like, the most valuable player during this set period?
I mean, everyone knows that Curry's better than all these guys. Like, he doesn't need to be on the first team
but
or the second team
or the third
team.
But I think people have a problem with that. Like, when some voters look and say, I know Steph Curry so much better than Oladipo. How can I justify
Well, then let's
Oladipo?
Let's put Kawhi on the third team. I mean,
well, that's the argument, right?
Seriously.
Like, in those seven games,
if that's all
played,
that matters is just we have to get the best players on the team, then let's put Kawhi on.
No, exactly. And I think there's no way to ever level the field in terms of how people vote. The other spot that we were really debating was first team forwards. And I think LeBron has solidified his spot over the last month due in part to how he's played. And secondly, that Kevin Durant, you know, has missed another couple weeks.
Did Durant ever have a case to be on it?
I think Durant still could get that second spot. It's between
so
LeBron, Durant and Giannis. For like, two forward spots.
I never thought of Durant as having a viable case to be on over Giannis or LeBron just based on games played. And like the fact that he's, he's been way worse than Giannis defensively and worse than LeBron offensively.
I think there's a chance that he gets one of the forward spots.
I think you're right. I just think it's going to
be
ridiculous.
I think it should be LeBron and Giannis now.
I think it would just be absurd. Yeah. And you can't – that Golden State team might be, like, the most underachieving team in recent memory. And
well, we both took the over on, what, like 70?
Yeah.
71
like,
and a half.
I was like, oh, what are they going to win, 74? Like,
yeah, that was what – I think I locked that in.
Who's this fat guy? Is that your boy Bernardo Sidney?
No,
he's really fat.
Is that Jason Maxiel?
Man, I don't know.
Sorry, this is bad audio
I'm
right
talking
now.
About the one in the white.
Right. Okay, this is the 03 McDonald's game we're watching. So there, LeBron just shook Duty EB to catch that alley-oop. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to look at that roster. But
it's great podcasting.
Yeah.
Really need to know who this fat guy is. There's two. To be fair, there are a couple fat guys out there. I'm talking about the fattest guy. Okay.
I see Charlie Villanueva. That's all I can focus on right now. I'm going to take this opportunity to tell the listeners about DraftKings. Believe it or not, for like the eighth week in a row, we're still running a special offer for new DraftKings subscribers. You get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription when you create a DraftKings account and make your deposit of at least $10. Now is a great time to redeem that with baseball starting tomorrow and a ton of baseball content being dumped all over the site by great writers like James. And if you sign up for DraftKings, you get a free $3 ticket to a one-day fantasy sports contest deposited right into your account. So you get that $10 in your account plus that free $3 ticket plus the free RotoWire subscription, which includes all of our DFS tools. You can use that for a shot at winning big cash prizes. Just go to DraftKings.com/RotoWire-2018 to sign up and claim your free subscription. And, of course, we're also brought to you by the FCFL, everyone's favorite football league. If you love drafting your fantasy team, imagine drafting a real professional team. The FCFL is bringing fantasy sports and Madden franchise mode to a real football field. You can scout players, draft rosters, hire coaches, call plays in real time, and even pick the team's name and help design its logo. But unlike Madden franchise mode, these are real teams with real athletes. The FCFL will feature 8 professional teams playing a full season of fast-paced indoor football in a high-tech production facility built for a digital audience. If you would like to learn more about the FCFL, go to www.fcfl.io. Everything is made by fan vote, so your voting power comes in the form of what are called fan tokens, and you earn these tokens each time you vote and engage with the team. If you'd like to learn more specifically about the fan tokens, go to fantoken.network today. All right. You got any baseball stuff you want to plug? I have no more basketball thoughts for this week.
I just can't wait for the baseball season to start. I can't wait for the NBA playoffs to start. That's pretty much, let's go.
How many baseball leagues are you in this year? I'm in 0, for the record.
Well,
for
I think it'd be more fun.
Consecutive year.
It'd be more fun if you just guessed.
Considering I follow you on Twitter and it feels like you're doing 8 drafts every day, I'm going to say in total leagues, we're talking best ball, all these things. Do best ball leagues exist for baseball?
Yeah, I'm not in any. Not in any? Those,
okay. I'm going to guess that you were in 16 leagues.
Oh. I didn't think you'd go too high, but you did. 13 leagues.
13 leagues. Is that a new career high?
Yeah. I think I was in 12 either last year or the year before. So, okay. Yeah, 13 is a career high.
All right. Well, again,
I mean,
all of our-
really, what? How many of those leagues should I win, do you think, without, like, if I don't win X amount, should I just completely hang them up? Should I just retire?
I think if you don't win at least 30% of those leagues, you will lose your guru status.
Okay.
You can still be an insider, but you will no longer officially be a guru.
So what's 30% of 13? That's got to be, 4? I've got to win 4 of them.
Does that seem doable?
I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can win 4 of them because a few of them are, 4 of them are head to head, and so that factors in head to head playoffs, which is a total crapshoot. Like, I think if we just said finish first in the regular season as counting as winning the head to head ones, then I think 4 is doable. But okay. I absolutely don't think I can count on having good enough luck in those head-to-head ones to bank on winning 4, knowing that some of these I'm up against really, really stiff competition.
All right. Excellent. Well, I look forward to keeping updated on how you fare vicariously in fantasy baseball. Last thing that I want to plug, I was made aware this morning that a 2 Chainz documentary is coming out on Netflix on Friday.
Did you know 2 Chainz has a book? I got a Snapchat my fiance. She was in DC and she took a Snapchat of a 2 Chainz book. The cover looked pretty awesome, and if I had gotten a hold of her while she was still there, I would have told her to buy it, and then I would have surprised you by putting it on your desk one day and having you walk into it.
Do you know where she got it or where she saw it?
At some sort of library. She was in DC. I think it was at a library.
Start checking flights to DC as soon as we hang up here.